Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking to the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District, Steve Pearson. Steve, we have a new station that's carrying our program this week, KYVA AM 1230 and FM 98.3 in Gallup, 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Sammy C. is carrying us there, and we appreciate that.
Sammy C., welcome to the group, and glad to have you on board. All of you listeners in the Gallup area, thanks for picking us up there. Be sure and support your local radio station. They play these programs free of charge, and we provide them with a little bit deeper dive into the issues, but always happy to see the new affiliates. Well, Derek, we had the president's speech to Congress. He didn't actually call it a State of the Union speech, just a speech to Congress, and Nancy Pelosi limited the attendance to that. Usually that chamber is full. I've been there for about 14 of those myself, and the chamber would be full. You'd have the full Supreme Court. You'd have the entire general officer staff and the Joint Chiefs, and that was always pleasant to see the nation's military leaders there. Of course, the Senate and the House would be jammed in the chambers together. It was quite the spectacle, and this year it was limited due to COVID. Now people can gather in any big box store across the country without worry. But there, you have to wear the masks, and we can only put 50 people from each body in the chamber. So it was a much different thing. But Dick Morris, I think, had probably the best analysis. He has what he calls his debate with Biden, and he'll play a comment from Biden in his speech. And then Dick, who has a tremendous background, served as a chief of staff for President Bill Clinton, and then became Republican after that, just could not stand to be part of the Democrat Party that was being taken over by progressives. And so Dick Morris, one of the Republican commentators. So I want you to listen to his commentary on that speech.
Last night's speech, Biden said, "We inherited a nation in crisis, the worst pandemic in history, the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. The truth is, you inherited a pandemic that largely ran its course. You inherited an economy that had already replaced half of the jobs lost in the pandemic and was growing enormously. And for you to characterize an unarmed band of misfits invading the Capitol and making a fuss in which only five of their number were killed, not any of the police, as the greatest attack on American democracy since the Civil War is the height of absurdity. You might want to think about Pearl Harbor or 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination or the Lincoln assassination in your list, Mr. Biden. How's your math? Well, try adding these up. $2.1 trillion for the rescue package stimulus, $1.8 trillion for the coming infrastructure package, and $2.2 trillion for the American Families and American Jobs Act package. Add those up, they come to $6 trillion that we'll be spending over the next 6 months. And at the same time, higher taxes on corporations, huge taxes that almost eliminate the prospect of new investment in plants and equipment. That equals inflation. Biden said, after I promised 100 million vaccine shots in 100 days, we provided 220 million shots in 100 days. The truth is, Trump developed, produced, and got approval for these vaccines. And the truth is, you've only fully inoculated 30% of America. How much energy and effort and brains does it take to stick needles in people's arms? Biden said, we're on track to cut child poverty in half in America this year. The truth is that Donald Trump cut it by a third already. Poverty declined from 15% of the country to 10% in the Trump administration. Biden said the economy created 1.3 million new jobs in the first 100 days. Well, from May until December of 2020, Trump's economy created 12.1 million new jobs. Biden said throughout our history, public investments in infrastructure have transformed America. Well, the truth is that 65% of the investments in infrastructure are private and still owned by private enterprise. Government had nothing to do with those. Biden said he would create new jobs by building a modern power grid. And he said our power grid was vulnerable now, witness the storms in Texas. The truth is that the outages in Texas were caused by the failure of solar and wind energy, the two forms of renewables he would like to replace oil and gas with. Biden said that there's no reason the blades of wind turbines can't be built in Pittsburgh instead of Beijing. No reason why American workers can't lead the world in the production of electric vehicles and batteries. Yeah, there is. These vehicles, the batteries, and the turbines require rare earth minerals for them to operate. We used to have a monopoly of them, but in 1980, the UN forced us when we accepted voluntarily, to adopt standards that basically were so expensive, they put our whole industry out of business. And China opened the mines as fast as we closed them. They didn't care what the UN said. And as a result, we import 80% of our rare earth minerals now from China. And that's, Mr. Biden, why we can't have American workers, as you say, make this stuff until you get off your duff and promote more rare earth minerals. We can go on and on. The last statement I'd like to rebut, though, is when Biden said, it's time we remembered that we the people are the government, you and I, baloney. We the people are we the people, not the government.
We've got a major fire burning down around Ruidoso. It started Monday of last week, and I will tell you, having been there for the Little Bear fire that almost crested the mountain, almost ran right down Upper Canyon into the town, they flew thousands of firefighters in there because the Forest Service, who let that fire get out of control, mismanaged it totally. They were afraid they were going to burn down the town. And so this time it would look like that the fire was going to sweep across the mountains and get into Alto, into that area. The fire started out of the Bonita Lake area. Got a little bit of rain over the weekend, helped quiet the fire down. But just decades of mismanagement by our U.S. Forest Service put all of our towns in the forest at risk. And so Cloudcroft, Lincoln County, Ruidoso, a lot of the communities up north in those big expansive national forests in New Mexico all face the same risk of fire because of mismanagement for decades by the U.S. Forest Service. And in other news, we had the governor on April the 8th sign the mandatory paid sick leave bill. And the Albuquerque Journal, to its credit, had a very good analysis on April 21st. I would draw you to that if you want to know more about that bill. But basically, the opponents describe it as the problem with government overreach. When the government tells businesses they have to pay for, in this case, 64 days paid sick leave every year, they get 1 hour of paid sick leave for every 30 hours they work. So it accumulates very fast. They don't have to give notice to the employers. So a small business person may be working after the COVID shutdowns, probably just hanging on by a thread. Suddenly they've got to pay people up to 64 hours of paid sick leave with no notice. How do they schedule someone else to come in?
Well, that's just it, Steve. They have to also pay somebody to replace the person that's on sick leave.
Yes. So they got to pay twice for every person that's being absent. And some small businesses simply are not going to be able to afford it. They will eventually shut down, and the business will then be picked up by a big box store, some out-of-state corporation. They can charge higher prices somewhere else while they compete with their prices here. They can bring that money in and make up the losses until they get rid of the competition. So basically, we're making it harder for the mom-and-pop operations that are the backbone of the New Mexico economy, and we're making it easier for the big box stores to run them out of business. So our dollars will again be moving out of state to the big out-of-state corporations at the expense of local communities who depend on small business owners to fund the softball teams, to be the members of the Rotary and the Lions clubs, all those service clubs. They depend on local business people to run for office. So small communities greatly disadvantaged by this paid sick leave bill that the Albuquerque Journal describes very well.
Steve Pierce and I will be back in just a moment with our guest, Ryan Lane, who is our state representative for District 3 here in New Mexico, coming up in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. In this segment, Steve Pierce brings on this week's guest.
Well, Derek, as we mentioned in the last segment, we have a special guest on today, Representative Ryan Lane. He is one of the freshmen that has come in this year and has really set the world on fire. When people wonder, is the Republican Party going to survive? Is it going to be relevant? All I do is direct them to this freshman class that came in both House and Senate. And Ryan Lane, the representative, is one of that freshman class that really has caught people's attention. So welcome to the program, Representative. Tell the listeners a little bit about where you're from, what your background is, where you grew up. Just let them know who you are as a person.
Thanks, Steve. Steve. A pleasure to be here. So I was born and raised in Aztec, which is in the northern part of the state up in San Juan County. As far as the background goes, before the legislature, I have my own law practice. But more importantly, my wife and I own an ice cream shop in Aztec, and that's a much funner business to run. But yeah, in terms of what I see as the future of the Republican Party and why I specifically got involved, my wife and I have looked around at most people involved in conservative politics, and this is not meant as a slight, it's just, I think, a fact of life, is they tend to be people that are older and in a later stage of life, and we need that perspective too. But I think what happens oftentimes as conservatives is we get so busy opening a business, coaching our little league teams, getting involved in PTO, all these sort of community institutions, being active in the church, which are all vital. We get towards the end of our life and we look at the state of things from a political perspective, and we, you know, we kind of gasp. And so we have tried to be very intentional to look at the gifts and talents that have been given to us. And the legislature was really just the next natural step in terms of applying those gifts with, again, the focus being let's not wait until it's too late to get plugged in.
My wife and I really came to the same decision. We were running our company here in Hobbs, New Mexico, had never given a thought to running for a state legislature. Then when we got into business, we realized that the state government was hindering business more than it was helping. And so I'm not much of a complainer. I just said, okay, if we got a difference of opinion, let's just run for office. I was in the state legislature for 4 years when I realized that the big impediment to business was coming out of Washington. And so we had no live plan to go to Washington. And it sounds like that you all have made the same decision that let's get involved. Let's start promoting these core principles of the conservatives. That's lower taxes, supporting the constitutional freedoms, supporting limited government, less intervention, less regulations that are choking off our jobs, more opportunity. And those things are the core values of the Republicans. So tell me, when you decided to run, is this a decision that you went to the party and got their backing, or did you just jump out and get into the river and start swimming?
Well, I think as people get to know me, they know that I do things a little differently. So I didn't seek, I guess, the blessing of the local party. We weren't antagonistic, but I mean, the reality was that I feel like to whom much is given, much is required. I believe strongly in that principle, and so I knew this is what I needed to do. Now, I did end up getting their support, of course, but it's one of those things where I think even if I didn't have that support, I still would have ran. And honestly, Steve, I think that's the kind of people that we need in public service, is you have a strong conviction and you're willing to pursue it, even if it's not always the most popular thing.
So when you got elected, you went to the state legislature for the first time. What committees did you get assigned to?
I was assigned to the House Appropriations and Finance Committee and the House Education Committee.
Okay, that's great. Again, my first assignment in my freshman year was the Appropriations Committee. I had to fight very hard for that. It's one of the two most important committees because everything goes in front of either tax and rev or appropriations. Tell me about your experiences on appropriations.
I feel very fortunate as a freshman to be on House Appropriations. As you said, it's one of the more important committees in both sides of the legislature, really. And it's incredible how much you learn about state government as a whole, both good and bad. And it's not somewhere that you want to go if you are looking to coast in the legislature, or if you want to be involved in, I'd say, the more sort of public, highly controversial bills, because House Appropriations, its primary goal in life is to construct and pass a budget for the entire state of New Mexico. That's not always the most sexy topic for people, but it is incredibly important when it comes to what is our tax base and how are those tax dollars going out of the state's coffers.
So who is the Democrat chair of that committee now?
Patty Lundstrom out of McKinley in San Juan County is the Gallup area.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Education Committee that you served on and who is the chair of that, and what are some of the controversial things that you all talked about in that committee?
House Education is chaired by G. Andreas Romero. He's a public school teacher out of the Albuquerque area. I will say that Representative Romero is actually a very fair chairman. He does a good job chairing that committee. But the committee itself is anything but nonpartisan, unfortunately. I mean, if there's one area of our life that you could make sure that politics played no part in, that area, in my opinion at least, would be education, the future of our children. But unfortunately, partisanship reigns in the House Ed Committee. It's still a very worthwhile committee, but this year there were 14 members, 10 of which are Democrats, and then, of course, 4 Republican. So it's very difficult to pump the brakes on bad bills that came through. Of course, there's always some controversial bills. One of the bills that we heard that I actually really liked was House Bill, I think it's 89, but it updated the graduation requirements for the state of New Mexico. And what it did also is it created this new concept of if there's a particular subject area that you are interested in, whether it's, say, math or shop or art, whatever it is, you can actually do like a one-on-one type intensive study with a teacher overseeing it, and that counts as a class towards graduation. So I like that idea of giving students more control and ultimately more ownership over their future, really. So, yeah.
Every legislative session comes with things that are just standout moments in a legislator's life. It will not always be the same for every legislator. So tell me about the things that stood out in this session for you. Again, this was your freshman year, and folks, were talking to Representative Ryan Lane. He's from up in the San Juan County area, up in the northwest part of the state, one of the exciting class of freshmen that have moved in on the Republican side. So describe one or two of the moments that you felt like were the big moments for you in this particular session.
It's always nice in a person's life where you have confirmation that you're where you're supposed to be, because sometimes there's doubts about, am I doing something like the legislature from my own personal gain or selfish reasons? But then you have confirmation whenever you see that you're really in the spot where you need to be. And for me, it happened a few times, but most of the moments were actually on the House floor when we were debating bills. You know, I am a newbie in the legislature, so to speak, but I never let fear paralyzed me when it came to debating bills on the House floor. And there were a number of times where I actually took the lead on bills. Again, not by permission. I just felt strongly that that's what needed to happen, and not in an arrogant way. It's just, again, if you have the ability, you ought to take the mantle. And so there were a couple bills. We debated the House Bill 4, which would become the New Mexico Civil Rights Act. And I had offered a proposed amendment on that bill, which I think actually is very reasonable. And what it did was it prohibits anyone who's in the legislature who is an attorney, which of course I am one of those, from, as long as they're serving in the legislature and they vote to pass the New Mexico Civil Rights Act, they can't bring a lawsuit to sue the government and benefit from this new law, which I think is a way to be transparent and above board. And there were a lot of heated debates along that amendment. There was another bill that it did a number of things. One of the things it did was it stripped out of state statute the New Mexico Police Bill of Rights. And I had debated that bill for probably 30 to 45 minutes. And at the end of it, I offered a floor amendment that would keep the Police Bill of Rights in statute, which are some very important due process protections for our men and women that are actually on the streets. And I know it's very important to them. And that amendment was actually accepted. And that was a huge moment. I got a number of phone calls and text messages from police officers across the state that I know. So a number of moments, but I'd say a lot of them center around the big leagues, if you will, whenever you're actually debating items on the House floor.
We'll be back with more of our interview with Steve Pierce and State Representative Ryan Lane in a moment on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
We are back on Inside New Mexico, and we continue our interview with the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce, and State Representative Ryan Lane.
What about the bill on qualified immunity?
The qualified immunity bill, House Bill 4, also called the New Mexico Civil Rights Act, it was pitched along the lines of this is a way to achieve police reform, and one of the ways that that would occur is to eliminate this concept of qualified immunity for our police officers. But the reality is, if you look at cases, qualified immunity is actually only available in federal courts, not involved in state court at all. It's not a defense. And in less than 2% of cases does qualified immunity actually totally dismiss a case. So it's a big misnomer. And really, House Bill 4 does not achieve any kind of correction of any alleged police misconduct. And the reason why I say that is a couple of things. One, the bill specifically states that you cannot sue the individual officer. You cannot sue the alleged bad actor. You can only sue the governmental entity. It also says that the individual bad actor cannot be held personally liable, only the governmental entity. And the reason why I emphasize those two is if this is designed to curb bad conduct of police officers, they are not on the hook for anything. And so at the end of the day, really all this is about is finding the deepest pockets to be able to sue and to target those pockets And unfortunately, this will do little other than enrich trial lawyers across the state and really drive up the risk management budgets of all of our, and it's not just state agencies, it's your local municipalities, it's your counties, and believe it or not, it's actually your school districts as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a trial lawyer's dream that anyone can claim that they've been treated badly by any governmental agency, and then they'll be held up for lawsuit. Overall, usually in your first session, you can tell if you fit well, if you like the legislative process. Tell us your reactions after your first 60-day session here in the state.
Steve, I think I must be some kind of a masochist because I loved the work of the legislature. I loved the process. I feel privileged to be a part of it. That doesn't mean that there weren't days that were extremely stressful. There were days where I literally wept over the future of our state, but it is really meaningful. It's really impactful work, and it's really necessary that we have men and women that step up, that are qualified, that are committed to do this kind of work. I'll also say, too, that I did make a number of relationships both within the Republican Party and also within the Democratic Party. And I'm hopeful that there's a new wave waking up within New Mexico, which is not always red or blue, but New Mexico first. And it feels like we've been controlled by really far left people for far too long that care more about what I would say is personal selfish interest than the interest of just the regular New Mexicans. And so I am hopeful and confident that there's a new wave coming and that there is hope still for New Mexico.
Yeah, I compliment you for that. Folks, we've been visiting in this segment with Ryan Lane, representative from the San Juan County area. Ryan, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity. People can connect with me on all the social media platforms at Lane for Liberty. You can find me on any of the social medias and reach out to me that way, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit about some important issues.
Absolutely. I encourage our listeners to check on to those sites. Help our conservative legislators, be friends with them, have chats with them on the social media. It's a wonderful tool, and it's where many of the people first got a vision of Representative Ryan Lane as he participated in his first session this year. And so we wish you all the best, Representative. Come back and visit us on the program, and people across the state will be watching for your actions in the future. But know that your first introduction to the people of the state of New Mexico has been a very positive one. I've been getting a lot of feedback on the way that you handled yourself and the way you handled the issues, and as a freshman, the way you took lead on certain issues. So we encourage you, and anything that we can do to help you along your pathway, let us know, and God bless you.
Thanks, Steve. I greatly appreciate that.
Well, in other news, New Mexico state government again making news in a bad way. The CYFD has recently been discovered that they are now using Signal. Signal is supposed to be a secure form of communication, but it also allows people to erase and it automatically deletes certain conversations after a period of time. But it's very secure and no one is going to be able to know what the department is doing. Now, that's in violation of all concepts of transparency. The CYFD is being held more and more accountable for violating the laws. They are actually suing families who are making allegations that they have violated the law. And so those countersuits to foster parents who should be thanked for taking on the role of being a foster parent instead become targets of an agency that is running out of control, violating the law, putting our kids at risk, and doing it with impunity. And now then they're going underground so that no one will be able to discover what they've actually been doing. And so this is what people fear, is government agencies working outside the bounds of the law with no ability to check on them, no oversight from either the legislature or for average citizens. And that lack of oversight always leads to more abuses. So, Derek, those are bad indications coming out of Santa Fe right now.
I've been looking around to get a new van for our radio station. New to me, we never buy a brand new van because they get too beat up. And even a 10-year-old van now, we're looking at $10,000. They say it's because the manufacturers are not able to get the integrated circuit chips that they need because they're made overseas. And so they can't make new cars, so people are buying used ones. I'll tell you, Steve, it's really scary. You and I grew up in a time when everything we bought was made in the United States. If we were in the situation in 1941 that we're in now, we probably would have lost World War II.
We won World War II because we had that tremendous manufacturing capability, and the government simply converted all that manufacturing capability over to produce tanks and aircraft. Germany and Japan could not keep up with the material losses that both sides were encountering. We lost huge numbers of aircraft, but we could replace ours and they couldn't replace theirs. And so it was a key element. Now then, we get so much of our manufacturing from overseas. That's that supply chain that then President Donald Trump kept referring to, that the supply chain is very international and we've got to worry about it. The supply chain of food, supply chain of manufactured parts for even items that are manufactured here, many of the parts come from overseas. And so it's a desperate problem that we face and one that we're going to have to cure, or we risk our international economy, but also our national security is at risk because of this failure to be able to get chips. When you can't get chips, then you can't make new cars. And when you can't make new cars, then people keep the old cars. And so what it's doing is driving the used car market up exactly like you're talking about. And the people that hurts most are the ones at the bottom of the economic spectrum, the working everyday man and woman who just trying to make ends meet, try to get their kids to school on time, trying to raise them correctly. And they'll buy used cars. Well, now the used car market is going sky high because of the new car market and the failure to make new cars. And so we see, once again, the people who are hurt most by these governmental policies that surrounded the COVID are going to be the working poor.
Thank you, Steve. And if you've been listening to what Steve and I have been talking about for the last half hour or so and would like to find out more about what's going on with the Republican Party of New Mexico, maybe get involved, check out the website at www.gopnm.org. Party has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. If you'd like to talk to somebody in person, call 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We look forward to meeting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.